None.
I knew a handful of stories that Dad had told, and we knew he was in something to do with intelligence, or we suspected that. But basically, when I asked him what he did in the Army in World War II, he said, well, when we liberate an area, I would go in and try to put in some semblance of order.
And that's all how he would describe it.
That was all he ever said.
So in the book, Nazi's Nightmare, we learn that he did a lot more. When did you first find out about his career?
I was rummaging through my mother's dusty, dank 16, 18-year-old storage room that everybody had pilfered through before to see if there was anything that I might want to keep. And fortunately, there was a box of cordials and spirits that had every bug in the place in it that I didn't want to keep. And I found this other box that had all these papers and two scrapbooks and baby book. And then I found the military training materials. Oh, my God. It was just that's all they were. It was his classes as a CIC special agent trainee. And that was May 16th of 6 years ago.
I can't imagine what you must have been every page that you turned, every letter that you looked at, you must have been uncovering more.
I immediately packed up that box that had Counterintelligence Corps scrapbook, high school, college stuff, and all these letters to and from he and some other special agents and to his parents from him and maybe a sister or two, and all these photographs and the military training documents. And I immediately packed it up and took straight back off to Fayetteville and put it out on the table and stayed up all night.
How did you make sense? Was it, I mean, of course, in the book, you present it with your father's words in chronological order. First, he goes to Camp Robinson, then Fort Leonard Ward, and moves on as his career in intelligence and eventually takes him across the ocean. What was it like when you found it?
It was overwhelming. What was it? What did it really have in it? This is military stuff. A daily journal of every day of the war with the mission of the invasion of Normandy and how the security was put together on it and what they accomplished. I mean, oh my, what's in here? Arrest reports of Nazis. I just decided the first thing I needed to go find someone to help me make copies of it and go see somebody that might would just take it over and take care of it and write books. And I went straight to Larry Malley at University Press, and he said, well, you don't have a book. I went to Greg Mack and said, hey, man, look at this stuff. Help me. He said, well, you don't have a book.
And I told Bill, I said, this is all fine and dandy, but somebody's got to write this.
Yeah.
And so actually Larry Malley said, well, you need to go see Tom Dillard. And that's where I got my direction and my focus and what could really happen.
Tom is the head of special collections at the university.
Right, yeah. Right. And he said we would love to have these papers, but it'll take us a while. We're working on some very major projects 6 years ago, and it would be a while before we get to it. So I said, well, why don't I just take them and make me a copy, and then I'll bring them back. So I made a hard copy because I didn't want to scan them yet, and brought him back the originals in 2008 and all the papers and signed them off to him. And then they were kind enough to let me take them back out to do the scanning part. I didn't think of how to do this book until a year ago, October 1st, exactly this book.
Was Greg helpful in that respect?
Greg was extremely helpful. He says, go get you a book and I'll help you promote it.
Well, I mean, basically, Bill had an epiphany that he didn't have to write a book. He just had to organize it.
Right. And that was a year ago. And I had that hard copy, so I went back to the original hard copies. I'd been scanning for a year, and I'd been trying to write historical fiction for three, and it didn't work. So I finished a couple other projects and put it all aside and thought, well, I will do the replication part because they can't get to that either. And I just started scanning, and other than keeping my income, I mean, John Lewis told me right off the bat, he said, don't forget to make a living while you're working on your hobby. So it took a year to scan all that stuff, and I woke up October 1st last year and thought, I know how to do this. And it took exactly a year to the day to send it off to the publisher.
There's a nice part of the book when he alerts family members to a Look magazine article, you know, that says Heroes Without Medals. And and I love that he writes, you might want to buy a couple, three of these to send out.
I found that magazine in an old magazine, used magazine treasure trove of a bookstore in Portland.
Really? Yeah, you found the actual?
Yeah, I went down to this place where they've got all these magazines, and I dug through all of his Look, and he had a March 7th, 1944 Look magazine. And I dug out that article, you know, and it's got the captions and the photographs. But that's the only photographed and written public, other than one article that's in the American called G-Men in Khaki, that I know that was ever written back then about him. And that was the early part of the war in Sicily.
After spending 6.5 years with this story and rereading and cataloging and then thinking about your dad, does it seem not so much a surprise now for you? I mean, when you put all the pieces together?
Oh, it doesn't seem a surprise at all. I went to see Is It Where Eagles Dare? And James Mason is in this very stately-looking German house, all fooling them, looking like a kraut. And my dad didn't remind me of him. He reminded me of my dad.
James Mason reminded you, yeah.
And I never knew, but that was the most, just gut feeling, kind of. You knew he was something.
Have you talked to anybody who might have been a friend, colleague, contemporary of your dad?
Well, lots of people, but not a whole lot about this. You asked if I was concerned earlier, and I kept this way under wraps. I mean, I told a whole lot of people about what my task was, but I didn't share a whole lot of all of this anywhere. I didn't even scan it till 2 years ago. I mean, I didn't know what I had. And I have friends. I've met U.S. Marshals. I've met – it's in the – you know, mentioned in the book that I met a whole lot of people who are in this business. And their first response to me was, you've got a lot of work to do. Get it done. I want to buy a copy. Hmm. And a real good friend of mine I went to high school with, and the FBI's proofread everything I've got. And, you know, it doesn't teach you how to blow up anything or doesn't put the FBI fingerprint version in there. But you know, you just kind of had this feeling about Dad all the time that he was the lawyer's lawyer. And he had a photographic memory in my mind. I asked him if he'd ever read The Rime of the Ancient Mariner when he was 62, and I was 16, and I was having a little difficulty with it. And he said, wait a minute. And you could just watch the wheels rolling around. He said, oh, I read it in high school when I was 16 and then started quoting it from page one, paragraph one, word one. And I went, oh, well, nice, isn't it? I think I'm going to go back and read it again.
So you can completely understand what the military saw in him.
Oh, absolutely. That letter from the Supreme Court Justice that recommends him for the second level of intelligence, it's all recognizable. He was the lawyer's lawyer. Glenn Lovett went in one day and said, I worked on this and worked on this and worked on this, and I know there's a precedent, but I just can't find it. He says, oh, well, I wrote that law, and it's in volume so-and-so, page so-and-so, paragraph, section point two or whatever. And you just went, wow. Anything he ever said, I don't think he ever misspoke a word he didn't intend on saying out loud.
Greg, I want to bring you back into this conversation. When Bill first came to you, he said, well, you don't have a book. You have the startings of a book. But based on the previous conversations you and I have had, you knew there was something here, didn't you?
Yeah, just from the Bill's level of excitement, and I've known Bill a long time, and I knew he wouldn't make anything up. And you know there's bound to be lots of stories out there, but just a little bit he was telling me about it, it just sounded more and more fascinating because that was, I guess as Tom Brokaw coined the phrase, America's greatest generation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, movies like Saving Private Ryan and The Band of Brothers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just love that stuff because these were kind of ordinary people that were thrust in this world war, and they were doing this on the fly. So you know that it wasn't like they had an intelligence department before that. So it makes, you know, if they find this guy, it doesn't matter he's from Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Helena.
What matters is he's brilliant and he can do this. And you know they were it's like Tom Hanks playing the character that was a school teacher. Because they say, like, you know, at D-Day, that wasn't won by planning or anything else. It was won by individual men doing individual heroic things. So that's the basis of this whole thing. Because you know that they had – once they realized the German war machine, it's like, we're behind, and we've got to get caught up in a hurry. Mm-hmm. because, like you said, they were already had spies in our country when we were half the people wanted to stay out of the war. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's so many fascinating side stories in there about the dinner with De Gaulle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one he actually told. That was one he actually told of. He said, you know, when we liberated France, Brittany, De Gaulle was repatriated, and I was actually second in command on the continent in intelligence. And De Gaulle, for a luncheon in Saint-Brieuc, brought all of his military leaders together. And he invited the Allied's counterparts. So Dad's boss didn't want to go because he didn't speak French. And Dad's story on it was, well, the joke was on him because my French intelligence counterpart went to school at Oxford and spoke better English than I. You know, so you know, you always got a kick out of that. And I had the menu. I mean, I found the menu. I mean, oh, my God. We're going to do a dinner at a couple of places. The Capitol Hotel and Bordino's have both agreed that they'd love to do a replication of the De Gaulle comes back to France dinner.
Oh,
it's about
wow.
six courses, and I think they're drinking Muscadet and Bordeaux with dinner. But before that, he describes that that he's going to have dinner with some regular Army big shots because their boss is coming to town. And he says he stumbles home the next day about 4:30, and the luncheon started at 11. And then no wonder the French lost the war, but boy, can they set a table.
All of this, of course, you go back to finding that box the first time, it's all a surprise. Was there any one thing that most surprised you in all
I think
this?
The one thing that most surprised me is the three pieces of evidence, and I don't have one clue as to what can be done with it. I've talked to DNA places, but I put it at the start of the part of the book where they're talking about lessons learned, and it gets to evidence. Mm-hmm. And there's a photograph in there of a little jewelry box from Edinburgh, Scotland, with a spent bullet in it that I believe has still to this day some bone material on it. And then there's a photograph right next to it of my father standing in a grave with a pistol in his hand, smiling, and it has a tack hole in it. And then there's another photograph from another angle that came in a different letter that has him throwing a football over that building from a different angle, as if in my information to say it would be that building. I think it's in Verdun. But I don't know who got it in Verdun, but I believe I have the bullet and the photograph and the description of how you keep evidence and stuff and why you keep it that makes you wonder,
what happened?
Who had that last?
Yeah.
But I know it's not one that whizzed by his head and went into a wall, the one that missed him. I know that's not the case.
But well, there were some pretty big names that he tracked down, too.
Oh,
so.
Man, there's some notes in there that changed the history of the disposition of one Hermann Göring at the point of arrest by the American troops. And you'll also, if you piece it all together, it says, we caught on the 17th of April, the entry is, we caught the biggest guy we've ever caught. And on the 16th of April is when Hermann Göring was caught. And they talk about who got what from whom, like Air Corps and this brought the Standartfuhrer back. And then there's a handwritten note about Fuhrer Hermann attempts suicide and does a lot of some nasty things. And that stuff's just not in the history books. Mm. And there's a collaborating piece of evidence in the Daily Journal, the Military Daily Journal, for on this, the second part I talked about was May 28th. In the Military Journal, May 28th, it says, Lieutenant Walker and the English captain work on the American that was a big shot in the Göring works. Looks as if a case of treason. I'd like to know who that guy was. Mm. I think he's probably the fellow that helped folks understand industry and banking and who had what money and where in the world market. Because they were very, very, very capable at stealing every bit of money they could ever find anywhere in any world, in any market they ever entered into.
And one last thought. It shows that, you know, you can grow up with someone, you can love someone, you can spend a lot of time with them. You never know the full story, do you?
No, but I never felt worried about when I was around him.
I bet not. I bet not.
You know, it's been my experience that some of the people that experience the most talk the least. It's that they feel like they've lived it, and they don't. I mean, I know a lot of Vietnam vets were like that, you know. They just, the ones that were really in the action, they don't even want to talk about it.
These guys just want to get the job done, come home, go bird hunting,
right,
and get on with their lives and marry their girlfriends and have babies.
And the quicker
just,
the better.
And just, and live, you know, and you know, it's a lot better being the conqueror than the conquered. I mean, things roll along pretty well. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing the end of that generation, and we're rolling into a new phase of the world right now. And there's lots of things you can apply in this book that you can draw your own conclusions on about what's going on. And I think they're very helpful to anyone.
Congratulations on a great achievement.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.